It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, now less than 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses. And in the countdown to the caucuses, we've been having conversations with many of the candidates here on River to River. Today, we hear from Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang. A note here, we want to note that what you're about to hear is not a live conversation. We recorded the following conversation with Andrew Yang a couple of days ago, Tuesday afternoon. That's important because that was before the Tuesday night Democratic debates. However, listeners did send us a good number of questions to ask Andrew Yang, and we've included as many as time permit in this conversation. A conversation with former tech entrepreneur, now Democratic candidate Andrew Yang, recorded Tuesday afternoon. Andrew Yang, welcome to our program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You say you should have been part of Tuesday's debate. Why, since you didn't meet the polling thresholds for this debate that were set by the DNC?
Well, first, we're well over the support threshold. We have over 400,000 individual donors, raised $16.5 million last quarter, more than anyone except for the top four frontrunners. But here in Iowa, the authoritative Seltzer poll, the DMR poll, had me at 5% and rising. We've been at 5% in two national polls that are recognized. So we're clearly at the level that the DNC had prescribed to try and have Iowans hear more from our campaign and present my vision for the country. So we're excited to make the case directly to Iowans in the days to come. And I've been campaigning for the last couple of days. The crowds are bigger than ever. The energy is higher than ever. And we're going to grow and grow and shock the world on February 3rd.
Okay. You know, a big surprise vote to come from behind, it sounds like you're expecting. Let's talk about what is at the center of your campaign, the implementation of a universal basic income. You call it the Freedom Dividend, $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year for every American over the age of 18, and this is regardless of work status or any other factor. Remind us, for those who aren't acquainted with it, how would it work? How would it be paid for? Why now, at our point in history, do we need it?
Well, first, you have to retrace our steps. Why did Donald Trump win Iowa by more than 8 points? Why did he win Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Missouri, all of these traditional swing states? I'm a numbers guy, and the numbers clearly show that we blasted away 4 million manufacturing jobs that were in those states, including 40,000 right here in Iowa. I've been to those towns, and they have never recovered. What we did to the manufacturing jobs, we're now doing to retail jobs throughout the state. Iowans look up, and they see that 30% of their stores and malls are closing, and the most common job in the state is retail clerk. Average retail clerk's a 39-year-old woman making between $8 and $10 an hour. So this automation wave, this fourth industrial revolution, Iowans have seen it on the farms. They saw it rip through their manufacturing communities. Now it's on the main streets. Soon it will be on the highways in the form of self-driving trucks. We need to humanize our economy and put the gains from the 21st century directly into our hands as quickly as possible. Amazon is the force that's closing 30% of the state stores and malls, and it's paying zero in taxes, less than everyone listening to this. What we have to do is give Iowans your fair share of every Amazon sale, put it into your hands, and build a trickle-up economy.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you expect Americans over the age of 18 to do with this $1,000 a month? How will our economy be changed by something that is unprecedented in our history?
It's not unprecedented at all. Alaska's had a dividend in place for almost 40 years where everyone in that state has been getting between $1,000 and $2,000 a year, no questions asked. It's made them stronger, healthier, created thousands of jobs, improved children's health, decreased income inequality. So there's a need at the ground level where people here in Iowa know too many of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Things aren't trending in a negative direction for many communities and many families. You put $1,000 a month into people's hands, we know exactly what they'll spend it on. They'll spend it on car repairs they've been putting off, daycare expenses, Little League signups, school and health bills, local nonprofits, religious organizations. It would create tens of thousands of jobs right here in the state. And again, this is the trickle-up economy from our people, families, and communities up. This is the opposite of what's happening, which is right now you're getting depleted. Rural areas in this country are getting sucked dry. There is no reversing the winner-take-all economy unless we actually take the gains and put them into your hands.
Mm-hmm. Amy on Facebook with a follow-up of sorts, she wants to know where you're getting the money to pay for this $1,000 a month for Americans.
Well, thanks, Amy. So again, who are the biggest winners in the 21st century economy? It's Amazon, Facebook, Google, Apple, these trillion-dollar tech companies that are paying zero or near zero in taxes. If we give the American people our tiny, tiny fair share of every Amazon sale, every Google search, every Facebook ad, eventually every robot truck mile and AI work unit, we can easily afford $1,000 a month for each of us. Right now, our data is worth more than oil, but we're not seeing a dime of it. Billions and billions of dollars are getting made off of our information, and we're looking around saying, what is happening to our communities? We have to get that value that's seeping up out of Iowa and heading to the cloud back into your hands.
Mm-hmm. Barb, also on Facebook, wants to know what you can do for the elderly living on $24,000 per year, besides the $1,000 a month payoff, yes. Specifically, I guess Barb's intention is there to have you address the elderly. Iowa is an especially elderly state.
Well, one reason Iowa's an aging state is that too many of your young people feel like they have to leave their town or even the state to access the kind of opportunities they want. That's what we have to change. Now, there are many Iowans here I've talked to who are struggling with prescription drug prices and making ends meet, and Social Security is not adequate to retire on. So first, the $1,000 a month stacks on top of existing Social Security benefits. It's the biggest expansion to retirement benefits that's been proposed in generations. I have parents who are in the retirement age, and I know what it's like to live on a fixed income where your income stays the same, but your prices keep creeping up. So what we'll do is put this $1,000 a month into your hands, let you retire securely and with dignity, and it's adjusted for inflation. We're the richest society in the history of the world. We can easily afford to take care of our aging population and not have people working until the day they die. I also have a five-part plan to bring down prescription drug prices and attack the costs that are making too many Americans have to make terrible decisions about drug rationing and being able to pay for drugs but not heating oil or food.
Mm-hmm. Let's have you clarify your position, your healthcare position. I'm not sure if Kay Hitchens on our Instagram correctly characterizes. Well, let me just read her question. Why don't you support Medicare for all when there's such broad-based support for it?
I do support Medicare for all. I think we should have universal healthcare in the United States of America. It's well past time. Our current system is breaking our backs because the prices just keep going up and up, and there's no control, there's no counterweight. But I would not legislate away private insurance plans immediately because I think that many Americans enjoy their coverage and even negotiated away wages and other benefits for their plans. So my plan is to provide universal health care and then outcompete the private plans over time and demonstrate that the public plan is higher quality, higher access, and lower cost.
Mm-hmm. And so specifically, your plan differs with that of Sanders and Warren in what way?
Well, exactly the way I just described, where Bernie's plan says we're going to get rid of private insurance very quickly. I think that would be extraordinarily disruptive for millions of Americans, and it would have very, very severe economic impacts. To me, I want to outcompete and wring those companies out of the market, but I don't want to legislate them away.
Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang, my guest this half hour. Question from our Twitter. This goes back to what you were talking about, the transformation of our economy here. Question on Twitter wants to know how we prepare our youth for what's ahead, specifically the youth.
Well, I'm a parent myself, so I think about this a lot. I've got two boys who are 4 and 7. The older boy is on the autism spectrum, so he's in a special needs school. If you look ahead, we need to have our educational system actually prepare our kids for the jobs that are going to be here. So number one, we have to invest in technical, trade, and apprenticeship programs at the high school level and even earlier. Only 6% of our kids are in these programs. In Germany, that proportion is 59%. We can't pretend all of our young people are going to go to college or even should go to college. We need to have more paths towards technical and trade opportunities. The second thing is we need to invest in things that will help our kids in a whole host of roles. Things like social and emotional learning, financial literacy, the arts has been proven to be very, very positive for kids' development. We have to try and teach them to become more adaptive and resilient and not think that if they fail, it's the end of the world. A lot of the jobs of the future will require this kind of adaptability and social skills and teamwork and less rote learning, which frankly, our technology and computers are going to be much better at us then. We have to humanize our economy, which also means humanizing the way we educate our kids, less on the way of standardized tests. We invented the SAT during World War II as a means to identify which kids not to send to the front lines. And now we're using it on our kids every year, like every year is wartime. We have to lighten up on the standardized tests and try and evaluate our kids in much more holistic ways.
Mm-hmm. Joe on our Facebook page wants to know specific jobs. You touched on this a little bit, but perhaps more in depth. What jobs can we train for that won't be sent overseas or replaced here with visa workers, writes Joe?
Yeah, so the most resilient jobs are going to be non-repetitive manual and non-repetitive cognitive jobs. So non-repetitive manual are jobs where you have to go into particular settings where trying to send a robot's not going to work. So you can think about that as line repair or plumbing or HVAC repair. Those are going to be here for a long time to come. The non-repetitive cognitive jobs, again, are things that revolve around working with people, sales, creative fields, coming up with new processes, so it's design. These are the fields that are going to be here for a while. According to the numbers, about 40% of American jobs are going to be subject to technological replacement and automation over the next number of years, which is a horrifying number. I mean, that's going to be a very, very difficult time for many, many Americans. But that does mean that 60% of the jobs that are currently with us will be here for decades to come. So we need to start trying to move people in those directions.
Mm-hmm. Brett on Twitter has a criticism. Let me just read this and have you react to it, Andrew Yang. Brett writes, I would like to know if Andrew Yang feels he's contributing to the problem by attempting to be yet another president without prior governmental or military experience. If he were elected president, he would occupy the highest political office and simultaneously be commander in chief of the military, two sectors in which he has zero experience. It seems the wealthy are becoming increasingly of the mindset they're innately qualified for positions in which they have no experience, and an exception should be made for them to bypass requirements. This wouldn't be acceptable in other fields. The end of the tweet from Brett there for you.
Well, I appreciate Brett's perspective a great deal. You know, the wonderful thing is this is a democracy. Americans can decide for themselves what kind of leadership they want, what kind of experience they want. In my case, I'm laser focused on solving the problems that got Donald Trump elected in the first place and rewriting the rules of this economy to work for us. I would never be the kind of person that would say you should run government like a business because they're two completely different things. They require very different leadership skills. Government is much more similar to running a national nonprofit, which I did for 7 years. You can't be top down. You have to generate consensus and galvanize energy around a vision to move people in a particular direction. So I'm very excited about the fact that my campaign has been growing purely through grassroots donations over the last number of months. We raised $16.5 million in increments of only $35 each. So my fans are almost as cheap as Bernie's. But there's no corporate PAC money there. That's just democracy in action. And I'm thrilled to have that democracy continue to elevate the issues that have been animating my campaign.
What would an Andrew Yang administration look like, feel like in terms of foreign policy? How would it be different than an Obama administration or a Trump administration?
If you look at this recent situation with Iran, we're at the brink of war. 75% of Americans want nothing to do with war with Iran. So how are we at the brink of a war that Americans don't want? If you look at our Constitution, it clearly says that it should be an act of Congress to declare war. But Congress has ceded that authority to the executive branch since 2001. As president, I would rip up the AUMF and return the power to declare war back to Congress where it belongs in our Constitution. I would invest in diplomacy and alliances and let the rest of the world know that they can rely upon the United States to live up to our commitments, to not make abrupt changes. I've signed a pledge to end the forever wars because I believe most Iowans and most Americans do not think we should be in a constant state of armed conflict as we have been for the last 19 years and counting. Mm-hmm. We spent over $1 trillion in Iraq, over $6 trillion in the Middle East. I have talked to hundreds, even thousands of veterans who have suffered injuries and PTSD and are struggling with a path forward now that they're home. If you think about this nearly incalculable cost, what has it gotten us? We need to take these resources and start investing them in making us stronger and more whole here at home, and also protecting us against the real threats of this time, which are climate change, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to climate change. Several of our listeners want to know your position on that. What concrete actions would you take as president to address climate change?
What politicians should stop talking about is that we can prevent climate change. Climate change is already here. Iowans know that. You've seen the floods. We've all seen that the last 4 years have been the four warmest years in recorded history. We all see these incredible wildfires in Australia that have killed 1 billion animals and are unprecedented. We need to act as if climate change is here now and start investing in making our communities stronger, safer, more resilient, and more adaptive. As president, one of my very first actions would be to put a price on pollution, to put a tax on carbon, take those revenues and push them towards wind and solar and renewable sources of energy. I would zero out the subsidies that we've been giving to fossil fuel companies and also move those funds towards renewable energy sources. We need to try and get our emissions down as quickly as possible with the harsh realization that the United States of America is only 15% of global emissions. So the rest of the world would need to change its energy composition very, very quickly for global warming to meaningfully reverse. We're on the curve. We need to invest money in making our communities safer before the fact rather than waiting for the disaster to strike.
Mm-hmm. To do all the things that you just mentioned, you need political consensus. What is your answer to achieving that consensus? We're very divided in this country about not only tackling climate change, but the degree to which humans are responsible. How do you achieve consensus where there is none?
Well, that's one reason why I believe my campaign is so important. I'm drawing in people who are disaffected Trump voters, independents, libertarians, people who've been politically disengaged, because I'm just solutions oriented and want to improve our way of life. Now, where climate change is concerned, I believe one of the big reasons why Americans can't develop consensus on it is because 78% of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Over half of us can't afford an unexpected $500 bill. So if I come to your door and say, hey, we need to fight climate change, your natural response is, I'm worried about next month's rent. I can't worry about a problem that might be coming down the pike years from now. So we have to get the boot off of our throats. We have to let people know that they're going to be here, their children's future is secure. And then when people's heads are up, then we'll be able to see, yes, climate change is one of the biggest problems facing us, and we need to come together and make moves in the right direction. The other big problem about addressing climate change is that when you talk to Americans, many of them hear this when you say we need to fight climate change. They think my prices are going to go up, things are going to become more inconvenient, and we're going to lose jobs. What we have to do is actually build climate change into our economy. So what do I mean by that? What is the cost of climate change going to be if you had to measure it? trillions of dollars, thousands of lives. So this is one reason why you have to put a price on pollution. And then you have to show people that the most expensive thing we can do at this point is nothing. Because if we do nothing, it's going to just get worse and cause more and more disruptions in our $21 trillion economy. So part of it is getting the boot off of people's throats, and part of it is measuring things so that people can see that fighting climate change is actually pro-growth, good for jobs, saves money, and does not make anyone's life harder.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned before, you mentioned Trump supporters before, and you mentioned also that Donald Trump won Iowa by nearly 10 points over Hillary Clinton. What have you been saying to those you meet here in Iowa who supported Donald Trump in 2016 and may support him again in 2020?
What I say to them is thank you for coming to my event, and let's solve the problems that you're seeing in your communities. The fact is, if you blast away 40,000 manufacturing jobs in a state and all of those towns go from blue to red, that to me is an understandable reaction, particularly when it seems like our leaders in D.C. are completely disengaged with what's going on in our communities. Washington, D.C. today is the richest city in our country. What are they producing? You know, we have to try and get the energy that's flowing to D.C. and bring it back to our communities and actually solve the problems that got Donald Trump elected. Mm-hmm. I don't blame people who voted for Donald Trump because they wanted something different, because the fact is, things have not been working for a lot of people here in Iowa and around the country. It takes a real leap of faith to take a bet on the narcissist reality TV star as president. We have to go back to why people decided to make that bet and solve those problems. Stop treating Donald Trump like he's the cause of all the problems, but instead like he's a symptom of an underlying disease that we need to cure.
Mm-hmm. And our final question, Andrew Yang, for you, we like to ask this of all the candidates we have on this program. How do you stay fit mentally and physically while on the campaign trail?
Well, I got to say, it's not easy. I try and snack healthily. I do get a basketball game in on the trail every so often because it's my favorite sport and it's one of my favorite things to do. Just getting a sweat going makes you feel more human. I ride my bicycle around when I can. I have two young boys, so, you know, you lift them up and throw them up in the air and get a little bit of exercise that way.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you for coming into our studio, Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang. We appreciate it.
Thank you both.